Welcome to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hochner, and I am crazy about cats and the people who care for them. I'm here every week with answers to your questions about living with your kitty. My number is 888-429-5471. I want to thank my sponsors. I've invited these companies to be here because I believe in them and use them myself. I hope you'll show your appreciation for their support by becoming a customer yourself. And Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. There's a whole week's worth of wonderful live pet shows I co-host on our own Radio Pet Lady Network. Stay tuned for Dr. Sue Ettinger on The Pet Cancer Vet right after this show. Cat Crazy is a production of 8 Paws LLC, which is solely responsible for its content. The number here again is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. I'd love to hear from you. And I am so excited and happy to welcome my guest co-host tonight, veterinarian Dr. Philip Padrid, the world's leading authority on feline asthma and probably anything that happens inside the lungs of a cat and probably inside the lungs of a dog too. Dr. Phil, it is so cool to have you here. Dr. Phil is the official vet and has been for years and years and years of my NPR show, Dog Talk and Kitties Too. So it's just so cool to have you here where people can call in and ask you questions. I'm going to give you guys the number again, 888-429-5471. Dr. Phil, how is it down there in New Mexico?
Oh, it's beautiful. Happy, happy Memorial Day, Tracy.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful day in New Mexico.
And you had an amazing time in Washington, just a little respectful moment to talk about what Memorial Day is about. And you were recently giving a talk to the American Association of Feline Practitioners, which we also want to eavesdrop and know what that talk was about. But you told me that you had a very moving visit to the World War II Memorial there. Can you just tell us all a little bit about it? Because I think that while cats are the most important thing in the world, so are some of the things happening in the human world. And I appreciate you cluing us in about them.
Well, I was actually surprised, and I apologize that I'm so naive. The World War II Memorial is only about 10 years old. I had no sense of its proportion or its size and had seen only a glancing picture of it now and then. But it's probably on more than an acre of land, and it's actually humbling. I don't know a better word for it. When you visit, in addition to the current servicemen and women that are on the grounds, there, when we were there, were a couple of hundred World War II and Korean War veterans, and it frankly is a humbling experience, and it really does feel like sacred ground.
Isn't that amazing? And this, you were not there obviously on Memorial Day, or you couldn't be here. So that was on any day they have veterans that are there in a kind of guardian kind of way?
I think it's one of those places that if you're a veteran of World War II, when you're in Washington, that's where you're going to go.
I see.
It was really pretty striking.
So it's part of them paying homage to their fallen brothers and sisters as well.
I guess, but I'll tell you, it's very, very moving.
Well, one more thing that on our to-do list for Washington, D.C., we forget how much the nation's capital has to offer in that area. Well, in terms of Memorial Day, it is something that we all want to really take a moment and think about. But I want to take a moment and ask, what is it that you were talking to the American Association of Feline Practitioners about down there?
Oh, well, they invite me every year or so in different venues that they have across the country to talk about conditions related to the feline respiratory tract. So it can be anything from chronic nasal disease in cats to feline asthma and anywhere up and down the respiratory tract.
Is it something that you can offer them new information about or just more of a concentrated focus? Because these are vets who went through regular vet school and they're not necessarily extra schooled in feline, right? I mean, they've just chosen that's a special interest of theirs.
Correct. In England, you can get a certification in feline medicine, but in the States, that official certification isn't yet possible. But I will tell you, as you know, I'm incredibly lucky and yet to speak within the United States and in the world, frankly. And the folks that are part of the American Association of Feline Practitioners and the folks that go to those lectures are some of the most serious, well-regarded practitioners anywhere that you'll ever find. So you really have to be on your game when you're speaking with them.
That's a good feeling because, you know, you have been the leading authority in this area for so long. It must be a great feeling when you're talking to peers who are specifically interested in the health and wellness of kitties, because their respiratory system is pretty much at risk, I would say. It seems that so many of the cats in shelters and in other high-stress environments get these upper respiratory diseases, and it's a huge problem, right?
Oh, for sure. You know, the overwhelming majority, and we're talking about more than 90% of cats that come from shelters, are exposed and get infected to feline herpes virus. And if you remember, when you're a child, if you get chickenpox, when you're an adult, you get shingles.
Right.
It's the same virus that's been in your system for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and the same mechanism occurs in cats. So once their little kitty cat's exposed to herpes and get infected with it, they will intermittently have symptoms of it for the rest of their entire life.
Rather than having what we think of as immunity.
Right? Exactly. No, the virus actually lies dormant in nerve trunks and can be re-energized. It's called recrudescing, but frankly, just wakes up and causes symptoms again every week, every month, every year. It depends on stress, steroids, other diseases, and sometimes just bad luck.
Wow. Yeah, so that's something that you know, when you adopt a cat, you don't always know how well they are or aren't. I'd love to take this call from Anne Marie, who I think just recently wrote me an email. Anne Marie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tracy. I really appreciate that you taking my call and that I found you again.
Well, I was very excited. I just wanted to tell Phil that just today, I mean, timing is everything, right, Anne Marie? I got this darling note from Anne Marie saying, I used to listen to you on Sirius, and I really miss you there. And then she had a question. And, you know, wouldn't it be nice, Anne Marie, if the folks on Sirius would actually tell any of our audience where to find us, since they got rid of all the pet shows? Wouldn't it be nice if they just say, hey, go to RadioPetLady.com. They're all over there, right?
I know. All I had to do was just Google your name, and I found you. So I was really happy about
that. Cool. Yay for Google. Well, you had a food question. Phil knows this is my passion. It doesn't have anything to do with the upper respiratory tract, but it does have something to do with the cat's whole wellness. Tell us your question.
Well, I have taken my cat off dry food for a number of years now, just because I was listening to you.
Yeah.
But I started looking in the pet stores, and I noticed now that they're cut. I don't know how long it's been out, but they have grain-free dry food.
I know. Isn't that clever of them?
I didn't know
they're
if
so
was
clever.
Something that I could give my cat, you know, not as a primary food source, but, you know, just once in a while, maybe if I go away for a night, just to have it out for them.
It's a really good question. Here's the story about grain-free. I don't know, if this is something that you followed yourself. Phil is the head of a lot of different vet hospitals, VCA hospitals in a whole part of America. It's Arizona, New Mexico, a lot of cool countries, that's hilarious, states in that part of the country. But he used to have his own practice in Chicago, a very successful one. And I don't think that the debate, Phil, about dry versus wet food was so active when you were in practice, was it?
No, I think there are a lot of factors that led to these discussions becoming part of everyday conversation in veterinary medicine, and I will give you credit for a lot of it, dear.
Oh, you're so
dear.
You've
really been part of this entire conversation.
I love that. You know, I'm extremely humbled. You, Anne Marie, you know how many years I was on the air on Cat Chat, and I had a number of times wonderful veterinarians and other experts on the show, and sometimes they disagree with me, but for Phil to say that to me, he's really what they call a thought opinion leader in the veterinary field, not so much to people, but to other vets. So it's, first of all, really a privilege for us all to be able to think and hear about things from his point of view, but that means a lot to me. Anne Marie, here's the kind of $64 question or answer, is that you can't make dough to make a bagel or spaghetti or dry animal food without having a starch in there, a very, very starchy starch, highly carbohydrate-y carbohydrates, because otherwise it would fall apart. If you've ever baked or made homemade pasta, or you know it has to kind of glue together, right? Have anyone seen that dough they sell for pizza? They even sell it now in the supermarket. That's sort of what the dough has to look like before it goes through the extruder, which squeezes it through something that makes it into circles or triangles. And then it's baked, boiled, fried. Things are sprayed on it and so forth and so on. So when it says grain-free, yes, it's free of wheat, which is a grain. It's not free of potatoes. Potatoes are very high on the glycemic index. If anyone listening is a diabetic or has any diabetic people in their family, you know that corn and potatoes are both really high on the glycemic scale or index. So you would not want to put those in your body because your body has trouble with that. Well, a cat is an obligate carnivore who should only be eating protein or meat. So any amount of carb you put in there above about 10% in their diet throws their system into kilter. So what you would be doing, Anne-Marie, is taking a cat who you've gotten into the peak of health by feeding him or her only canned food and saying, well, if I go away, I'm going to leave out a carton of cigarettes. Have at it. I don't think you really want to do that, right? I don't think that's your desire. So no. If you want to give them a treat, they're also not snacking animals. They don't need to graze like my mini donkeys, Mona and Lisa, or a cow or a sheep. They really eat by opportunity. Oh, goody, I caught a mouse. Oh, whoopee, I got a bug. I got a bird. So eating all the time isn't what they're physically set up to do. That's not how their digestive system is programmed. If you want to give them something really great, send me your mailing address to RadioPetLady@gmail.com, right where you sent me the question. And in your case, I'm going to send you a coupon for a full $20 container of precious cat litter because I'm so excited you found me and I want you to tell all your cat-loving friends that you know might have listened to me on Sirius where to find me. So I'm sending you that. But also Whole Life Pet makes freeze-dried protein treats made of 100% human-grade protein. That's all that's in them. And they'll send you a free sample box. So if you want to leave out something that's sort of snackish, let's say, you know, you're going away for less than 24 hours. You give a really good meal before you leave and then hide a few Whole Life treats, protein snacks around the house. And the kitty can find them as kind of like something to keep her busy. When you come back, you give some more wet food. Or a neighbor or friend comes in within about 12 to 15 hours and puts down another can. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That works? Yeah. I mean, okay. My veterinarian is on the wet bandwagon. He doesn't recommend dry, but I thought I'd go to you first.
No, I want to love your veterinarian. You've got to send me his name and his address. I'm going to send him a present. Seriously.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm serious. If he's on the wet-only bandwagon, you got to give this guy all the praise in the world, okay?
I will, definitely.
And send your mailing address to RadioPetLady@gmail.com, and anyone else listening can have the same. Dr. Phil's going to get an extra large box from Whole Life Pet being the guest co-host. Well, of course, what else? And Nordic Naturals comes your way, too. Anne-Marie, I'm thrilled you found me. Send me that mailing address. Lots of goodies coming your way. And keep on listening, because every week we have something new and fun. In fact, next week we're going to be in New York at the Halo pop-up store where they're doing lots of pet adoptions from a store where no Halo is sold, only good things for their foundation. Thanks so much for the call. Have a great night.
Thank you.
So, Phil, I knew that Robin from Cat Hair might call, and I'm hoping that she has an upper respiratory type question to ask because she has an amazing cat and kitten foster that she does. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Good to be back.
Great to have you here. You know, we have Dr. Phil here. There's really no greater mind on the whole topic of the upper respiratory system of the cat. And you have your kitten associates and you do foster and rescue. And
yep.
You recently lost one of your kitties to FIP. I'm hoping you have some questions that would be that Phil could give you some fabulous, valuable info about.
Well, actually, I do have a question.
Yeah.
We run into upper respiratory issues all the time. But right now, Fred's brother, the cat that passed from FIP, has been coughing on and off this. And I'm a little bit concerned. First, I thought maybe it was a hairball. And then I thought maybe he had worms, because cats can cough when they have worms. And he had roundworms a long time ago that was treated a few times. But I'm not really sure what it is.
That's a great question, Phil. The whole issue of that, that cats cough when they have a hairball, I think, is misunderstood because that's a very different sound. Can you talk a little bit about cats coughing, Phil, and what that can mean?
Oh, for sure. You know, it's very easy to watch a cat with hairballs and think that it's coughing, but if you watch closely or you have a moment to really evaluate exactly what they're doing physically, hairballs are really something they're vomiting. And the vomiting reflex and the eructation is a little bit different from coughing, and I know you know that. When cats are coughing, you really can look at it the same way as if you were coughing. It can be anything like they inhaled something like dust in the environment and it's just one cough, or it could be something that's related to a seasonal allergy, or it can be representative of a more significant disease. And the disease can be starting in the upper respiratory tract, because just like people, if you get post-nasal drip, it really can cause a cough, down to something like bronchitis or asthma or something infectious like heartworm or even more serious. So the presence of a cough can be the result of something quite serious and a serious health risk, or it really can be the result of something kind of trivial. And it's hard to know, just watching them cough once, which one of those things might fall under.
One of the things, Robin, that Dr. Donna had said, and this probably is one that you would suggest too, Phil, is that since everyone's fancy phones nowadays allow them to take a picture or even a video, that sometimes it's really helpful to the vet if you can take a video of that cat coughing, and in no time, a vet like Phil, whose focus is on the lungs and the upper respiratory system, goes, "Got it. Okay, no, it isn't this, but it could be that."
Mm-hmm. Well, the curious other thing he's doing, and this is it's not all the time. It's very kind of once a day, twice a day kind of thing. He will actually, just after running around, all of a sudden look like he's going to retch. So sort of like kind of his head will come back up high. His mouth will open really wide like he's trying to get something out of his throat. So I looked to see if he had maybe gotten something in his throat, like a piece of a toy or something. I didn't see anything. And
That's a classic sign of asthma. Phil, explain to her how the exertion is the important way to know that that could be asthma.
Hey, Robin, is that open mouth looking like they're going to retch at the end of a cough or completely independent from coughing?
Independent.
All right. So the thing I was going to tell you, and I'll respond directly to what Tracy just asked, with coughing, there are two things that I always ask cat owners. And the first is your kitty cat exposed to cigarette smoke? I'm not the coughing police, and I'm not – okay, great. So the second thing is at the end of the cough
– We are –
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I've been told that this is the worst pollen season in, like, recorded history. And we do have a lot of pollen in the air.
Well, for sure. That can always be one of the reasons why you, me, dog or cat, horse, pony might be coughing.
Right.
Sure.
What I will tell you is at the end of the cough, I'd ask you to look at the end of the cough. Do they gag? Do they choke? And or do they swallow? Because what that represents would be a productive cough, meaning they're bringing mucus up to the back of their throat.
Right.
And since they really don't spit the way we do, they'll gag, choke, or swallow. And I bring it up because a productive cough, a cough where you're getting mucus, is generally coming from the lower airways, where those goblet cells and the mucus glands that make mucus are producing the stuff. So if it's an upper respiratory tract thing that really is upper, and sometimes allergies can do that, and sometimes some serious problems can do that, it's not productive. You know, heart disease wouldn't necessarily be productive. Cancer wouldn't cause a productive cough. But bronchitis and asthma will cause productive coughs. And I'd ask you to look at that pretty closely.
I will. I am taking him to the vet, too. I mean, we're taking him in tomorrow morning. I'm not going to mess around with this.
Excellent.
But that's good. But if you could get that, if you have a chance to gather that information.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Then you would come with that information and say, hey, by the way, you could impress your vet like a way lot, Robin, and say, I was talking to Dr. Phil Padrid yesterday. They'll go, "You were? Really? I thought he was in France telling the Frenchmen how to deal with their cats." So that would be very cool. But the open mouth after exertion difficulty catching breath, I guess, is a way to put it. Phil, is that not a pretty classic sign of asthmatic situation?
Oh, it sure is. The exertional kinds of dyspnea, I mean, in English, when you exercise and you get much more winded than you might imagine,
yes,
is oftentimes the result of what we call bronchoconstriction, or when the airways clamp down. It's one of the primary reasons why you see kids playing soccer on a Saturday morning taking the inhalers.
Yes.
Because when they exercise, that's when they constrict, and that's when they wheeze, and that's when they cough. At rest, you may not even see these symptoms. So for sure, if you're seeing this when they exercise, I'm glad that you're bringing them to the vet just to be sure.
Yep.
Yeah, well, and the thing is he doesn't always do it, because I played with him pretty hard today. And he ran around and was jumping very high in the air. And I saw his respiration go up, but nothing. No gag, no discomfort. It's very unusual. But that's why you take him to the vet, because you want to make sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so you're absolutely right. You're doing everything that you can for the little kitty cat. And the funny thing is, you know, some people can smoke cigarettes and live to be 95. So how these, you know, you, me, dogs, cats operate, we wish it was incredibly predictable and they would always do
right.
the same thing.
Right.
But we don't. So you
that's
got what
right.
you got, and you'll bring them to the vet, and I'm sure your vet will do a great job.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then the kid on the soccer field, he doesn't need his inhaler after every goal that he kicks, just some goals, you know, right?
Exactly.
Only otherwise, it'd be one. Like ODing on his emergency inhaler. Robin, thank you for the call. Thank you for being such
welcome.
A devoted listener. It's great to hear from you.
Thank you, Dr.
And let us
Phil
know what happens
too.
To Freddie's
night.
Little brother. It's really wonderful
I
to
will.
Have
thank you.
Part of the family. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about secondhand smoke, because Robin said, no, not me. But, you know, it's a lot of people still smoking. So we got to hear from you, Dr. Phil. What does that do to our kitty cats? We'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Waruva, a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility. So it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands, are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those you're trying to transition away from dry foods, which Waruva chooses not to make because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore, and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is supported by the Pheromone Products Feel Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Adaptil can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and Feel Away diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feel Away and Adaptil as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who've just left their litters. Look for Feel Away and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. We are back. You're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm Tracy Hodgson here with my wonderful veterinarian guest co-host, Dr. Phil Padrid, who is also the official vet of my NPR show, Dog Talk. Our number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Dr. Phil, secondhand smoke, it really affects cats probably more than any other kind of pet. Can you talk about some of the problems to the upper respiratory system of the poor kitties when the folks are puffing away in the house?
Sure. A couple of things. Let's not completely forget our canine friends, because there's a very strong association between the presence of secondhand smoke and nasal and sinus cancer in long-nosed dogs like collies.
Really?
But for cats, there are two really specific things, and they both are really kind of interesting and when you think about it, it makes sense. But on our own, we've been able to come up with it. The first is that, and this came from a study from Dr. Tony Moore, who's a veterinary oncologist who used to be at Tufts. And this was published in the Journal of Epidemiology, and that's a human journal, demonstrated
really?
That cats that are exposed to cigarette smoke in the human household have a 2 to 4-fold increase in development of cancer, specifically malignant lymphoma, or the kind of cancer that goes on in lymph nodes that's so common in cats.
Wow.
We think about lymphoma, we think about FELV, but smoking is clearly associated with the development of lymphoma in cats. And that, of course, is tragic and completely avoidable. But the second thing, and it is kind of also unique to cats, and when you think about it, it makes sense, is that because they're so low to the ground, all the hot stuff that comes out of a smoker's lung that they breathe into the air and the cigarettes that are burning actually eventually do fall back down, and they fall back down on the kitty cat's fur and pelt. And our kitty cats all groom themselves fastidiously.
Right.
So when they're licking themselves, they have a much higher incidence of a kind of cancer in the mouth called squamous cell carcinoma, which is another deadly form of cancer. And it's so completely, totally preventable if these guys are just not exposed to the cigarette smoke in the first place.
Oh, that really is tragic, because that's a very common – oral cancers in cats are really common, right?
Oh, absolutely. And they're tragic because even if you're lucky enough to catch them really early and try to treat them, the treatment of the oral cancers almost always involves surgery, which is terribly deforming and all the stuff that you can imagine involved with that.
Yes, and then they sometimes can't eat afterwards, right? Like they take off the jaw or part of it or the – like it's the tongue. I don't know. It's a mess, right? I mean, when that mass gets big enough in the mouth, they have to cut away just a huge part of their face.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly it. You're absolutely right. And it's that whole grooming behavior of the cat that really triggers all of that.
Now, I have a neighbor, and I'm sure they don't smoke now. And they had two Siamese, one of whom had this large growth in her neck/lower jaw. Now, they didn't catch it early, and so then it was too big and it was growing fast. Is any of the squamous cell carcinoma just there by genetic bad luck, or is it really environmental for the most part, as far as Tony Moore or others may have found out?
Well, Tony's study really was about lymphoma, and I guess if we can identify the cause of every instance of cancer, we're going to be on the cover of Time and Newsweek. You know, it's one of those Nobel Prize winning deals.
Right.
But we do know that because of the kind of soot and ash and stuff that falls on cats, especially when they're indoor cats, so they're really exposed to it constantly,
right. The
incidence of that form of cancer goes way up in the mouth and the nasal cavity. And so it may not be every case every time, but again, it's a much higher risk, and it's a risk that's completely and totally preventable.
Now, the part that I hadn't thought of, I mean, I know about it falling on their fur and they're always self-grooming and then they're swallowing it. But it never occurred to me that when the person exhales, that exhaled material is just as carcinogenic as the smoke coming off the tip of the cigarette.
Well, to some extent, sure, because while the lung in the nose of the person is acting as a filter to safeguard the cat, it's not a perfect system, so they're breathing out a whole lot of crud that still falls to the cat's fur. But if I can just make one other point.
Yeah.
The deal with smoking is that anything that causes any respiratory problem in the kitty cat, smoking is going to make worse. So no matter what the cause of the cough is, if you're trying as a veterinarian to treat it, you really have to ask the owners if they smoke, because if the kitty cat's exposed to smoke, whatever you do to try to treat whatever the problem they have is, smoking is going to make it worse. So on all kinds of levels, this is a mess. And certainly things like bronchitis and asthma are only going to be made much worse by the presence of cigarette smoke as well.
So the whole social movement, if you want to call it that, to have smokers go outside with their filthy habit, they probably are not exercising that at home, because it's like, well, their home is their castle. It's the last darn place on the planet that they're allowed to smoke indoors. But maybe they have to really do just what people do in an office building. Put on their coat if it's winter, go outside and do the damage to your own lungs outside, and don't expose your poor kitty to life-threatening illness, which is really, as you said, it's many times over. Because their body's so little and they're so close to the ground. Ugh.
It's really funny. I've had the experience many times, and many veterinarians have reported the same thing, that mom and dad bring their kitty cat into the hospital, and you're talking to them about the history, and it turns out that the kitty cat is exposed to cigarettes. the same conditions for which mom and dad have been arguing for many, many years, and one's a smoker and one's not, and the one who's not a smoker couldn't convince the smoker to stop. Once I tell him that the smoking is adversely affecting the cat,
I love it.
Then there's an enormous revolution that occurs in the house, and the smoking stops.
So the spouse wouldn't do it for their spouse, their human partner, but they'll do it for the cat.
Exactly.
That's pretty nice. Just one question about the lungs. Is it true that they really can repair themselves, as we were all taught in those scary films we were shown in junior high, where they show you the carcinogenic black charcoal lung from the smoker, and then after a certain period of time, your lungs can repair themselves, or your cat's lungs can repair themselves, if they haven't gotten cancer, of course?
Well, that's certainly true in people. And, you know, people use a rough estimate for a smoker about 10 years to completely clear the lung of the effects of the smoke. Now, if the kitty cat's entire lifespan is 15 to 18 or 20 years, you can see that you really can't use that as an estimate of what might be helpful for the cat. But just one other point real quick. This is about 15 years ago. The American Association of Pediatrics, the human pediatricians, were meeting in San Francisco, and they had their yearly ballots and yearly questions that they ask one another. And there was a question on the floor of the assembly of the American Association or Academy of Pediatrics. And the statement was, should parents of children who have asthma, who smoke in front of their children, be charged with child abuse?
Wow.
And it was voted down, but it was about 55 to 45, which means at the time, about 45% of the pediatricians voting wanted to charge the parents for child abuse if they smoked in front of their asthmatic children. So that's how big a deal this really is.
Wow. And, you know, anyone who's seen an asthmatic child or is an asthmatic person themselves knows how terrifying it is to feel that you're being suffocated. And if you've ever experienced it or seen someone gasping for breath and reaching for that inhaler or not having it in, you know, emergency room, hospital, you know, life-threatening, that's what the cat who has asthma is experiencing, right? I mean, it might not look like they're as sort of panic-stricken as a human, or does it look like that?
Well, in the worst scenario, absolutely, you can see the terror actually in their little kitty cat faces. But remember, our kitty cats are designed to protect themselves, and they can't show fear. They can't show pain.
That's right.
So that's why they hide, because the predator seeing a cat that's limping or having trouble breathing would pounce on them. So they really avoid contact. And that's why our kitty cats get sick and avoid us. We don't know it till they're really, really sick. But you're absolutely right. And most of the people in my career that I've counseled about cigarette smoke in front of their kitty cats honestly never even thought about it. And once I make the point, and we make the point, that these little ones are going to be really adversely affected, but the overwhelming majority of people that I've worked with have felt terrible and have immediately stopped exposure of their kitty cats to their smoke.
So it's funny, because sometimes learning about animal nutrition for dogs and cats makes people reconsider their own nutrition for themselves and their kids. I've seen people suddenly want to add omega-3 fish oil, or maybe have less carbs in their own diet. And it seems like it's possible the adverse effects of smoking on cats might actually inspire some people, or have already inspired them, to if you can't stop, then not being able to smoke in your house means you're going to smoke that much less, because how many times can you go outside, especially in Chicago or North Dakota, right? Because it's cold a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
So who knows, maybe
true.
The cats are helping people from doing more damage to their lungs. Wow, that's really an important message to people. And so if you're going to take your cat to be babysat by the grandparents, meaning your dad and mom or your in-laws, and they smoke, I would say think twice about it and pay for a pet sitter, because you cannot tell the grandparents of the cat not to smoke, but you really don't want to put your cat in that environment. And I'd really never thought of that before. I mean, even a few days, especially if the cat, you don't know, they might be borderline asthmatic, right? Their lungs are already a little vulnerable, not working at 100%. It wouldn't be helpful to throw in all that carcinogenic smoke. We're going to go to a break. When we get back, more about your cat and her lungs from Dr. Phil Padrid. The number is 888-429-5471. Give us a call. We'll be right back after this break. Support for this show comes from VaxaCheck. Are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxiCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. VaxiCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Halo is a private company, partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy, inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Catatrack litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief Litter is low dust for pussy cats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. We're back. You're listening to Cat Crazy. I'm here with Dr. Philip Padrid, feline asthma specialist, 888-429-5471, if you have any upper respiratory issues with your kitty. What about that litter that has less dust, Phil? I've never had a chance to ask you about that. Is that something you recommend to cats that already have asthma issues?
Oh, for sure. I recommend it for every cat owner. You know, litter is an inert substance, and all it means is that biologically, litter can't trigger an allergy per se, because that involves a whole bunch of other
right.
stuff, glycoproteins,
right.
but it is dust. And any animal that's supposed to be breathing clean air, you, me, dogs, and cats, when you're exposed to dust, are more prone to be uncomfortable and sneeze and cough. If you take an animal that already has what we call twitchy airways, so they're already
responsive. Well, I love that phrase, twitchy airways.
And that's what people with asthma, cats with asthma, bronchitis, those kinds of folks have, you know, heart failure, all that stuff.
Yeah.
The airways are much more twitchy. They're more prone to having a bad reaction to tiny little things. And then you put a kitty cat basically in a giant mound of sand for which they're stirring it up when they're doing their business,
right.
It absolutely is going to be the case that they're going to have a more difficult time breathing. And once they start coughing, coughing begets more coughing. So the common sense approach is to get rid of the dust in the first place. And I know you've worked with a bunch of folks who make the kinds of litter that keeps that kind of dusty environment away from our kitty cats.
Yeah, and in fact, I was once at a convention, a conference or something, and there was the Precious Cat booth, and I was just over there looking at the products, sort of like just educating myself. They've been a wonderful sponsor of Dog Talk and of this show. And there were two or three people that came over. They were like, we can't get the – they were retailers, not individual customers. It was for people in the business of the pet business. And this one gal lived, I don't know, really seriously, someplace like North Dakota, come to think of it, and there wasn't a distributor that carried Precious Cat, and she was absolutely desperate. She wanted to, like, buy a bag off the floor and bring it home, you know, the whole heavy thing in her luggage. So I guess when you do have that asthmatic cat or the cat with any twitchy airways, which now is my new favorite phrase, it's real. I guess once you get away from dust, you really realize the difference. I know that when I'm just cleaning the little mini donkey's barn and I just am moving the sawdust around, I don't, and I'm an allergic person, but at that moment, I'm not coughing or sneezing. And I don't even see the dust particularly, but I come inside and I'm not seeing well. And my glasses have a thin film of dust on them. So I'm sure that anything dusty that you stir up, like litter or like sawdust for an animal's bedding, really does put a layer of stuff in the air, which your twitchy airway would not appreciate.
You bet.
Tell us about herpes, feline herpes in the nose. This is something I don't know about. We should all know about this.
Well, every veterinarian who's been in practice more than just a couple of days is going to come upon a client who brings in a kitty cat with chronic nasal congestion and intermittent sneezing and intermittent snotty stuff coming out of their nose.
Okay.
And what we do historically is we put these guys in antibiotics, and it never cures it. because it's never the primary problem.
Right.
The primary problem almost every time is a kitty cat with herpes. And with herpes, it really affects their respiratory system much more than people and causes a lot of destruction in the nose. So the normal covering of the nose, all those little hairs we call cilia and the little tissues we call mucous membranes, it knocks that out, and that's the primary defense against all the stuff we're breathing normally. So when the herpes virus comes in and wipes out the cilia and the mucous membranes and all of that stuff, now they're prone to all kinds of infections from organisms in the air that normally isn't a problem, and that causes chronic destruction. So you have cats for the rest of their life that intermittently have nasal discharge, and it's not necessarily life-threatening to the cat as long as they can still breathe through their nose and smell food. But it's a gosh-awful mess to spend your life with a kitty cat that's snorting snot, for lack of a better word, all over the house for 15 years.
Wow. So the antibiotics that are given is just incorrect. That's just like a dartboard kind of, oh, it must be a cold, so to speak, and I'm going to give you antibiotics, which anyway don't work for a cold. Is that a mistake to give antibiotics? Is that pointless?
Well, I certainly don't want to second guess any veterinarian who's seeing a patient in front of them, because you know you have to deal with what you're seeing. But historically, we've treated chronic nasal discharge as if it's an antibiotic deficiency.
Yes,
and that's not
like
the problem.
That.
and again, we never in our lives will never have a chronic bacterial infection in our nose, either do dogs or cats. So the underlying problem is really never bacteria, but you wind up getting green and yellow stuff because we're breathing bacteria, and in the presence of the herpes infection, the normal bacteria that they're breathing becomes an infectious process. So the short answer is, when you see green and yellow discharge, you're sort of obligated to give antibiotics, but understand that's for a very short period of time, and that is not designed to cure the problem because it's not the problem in the first place.
So what do we do that deals with, may not cure, but properly or effectively treats the underlying problem?
Well, if you think about how we, you know, if you have a child and you bring them to the pediatrician and has a cold, pediatricians are just under the exact same pressure we as veterinarians owners want us to give antibiotics. And it's almost always a viral problem, not a bacterial problem, but some pediatricians feel the same kind of pressure. So we're in that same situation. Pediatricians, veterinarians have been facing this for 40 years. So you can do the same common sense approaches. You can use decongestant nasal drops like Afrin or Tristan or Little Noses that we use for people. Put the little kitty's face, so the nose is facing straight up in the air. Let one drop fall on a nostril. You hold their little head up for a second so they breathe in, and that's, you've treated one nostril. Put another drop on the other nostril, and now within about 5 minutes, they can start to breathe through their nose. So that's one of the simple things you can do. Because remember, if they have a snotty nose, imagine if you had a cold and someone tied your hands behind your back so you couldn't blow your nose. That's the process that they're going through their whole life. So when they have snot in their nose, they don't really have a good mechanism to clear it. And once they get really congested and can't smell their food, then you know as well as everybody else, now they get into some trouble because if they don't smell their food, they go off food. So a decongestant is really helpful. Physically cleaning the exterior part of their nose with tissue paper or a little cotton swab is helpful. Veterinarians oftentimes will use antibiotics for the secondary infection. And then when it's really chronic, there are some drugs that we can give, and usually, honestly, inhaled drugs, inhaled steroids, just like people use for allergies, that really calm down the inflammation and help quite a bit as well.
Wow. And inhaled steroids, the same ones that you use for asthma treatment?
Yeah. And, you know, when people, they call those drugs Flonase. Those are drugs that are used for inhaled allergies. They're very effective in this scenario. And if you think, well, it's an infection, why would you use a steroid? In this setting, the kind of inhaled steroid that we use is actually very helpful to damp down the inflammation that the herpes is causing.
And, of course, one of the things that we discover about antibiotics, I mean, it's becoming more and more the conversation, is that not only is our food supply, the animals that we eat, are laced with antibiotics, which are creating all kinds of nightmares of antibiotic resistance, whether it's in those animals or in on some level the people that eat it, but giving antibiotics to people when it isn't appropriate, because it's done quite a lot, as you say, pressure to the pediatrician or even pressure to the veterinarian. Well, you've got to do something. There's an infection, and isn't an infection need an antibiotic? And the problem is that people don't even give the full course of it. They give the antibiotic. They see an improvement within a day or two, And I don't think people understand the extreme social urgency of, if you're going to take antibiotics, which you really should save for serious situations so you don't develop some, or the bugs in you don't develop some tolerance, you have to take the full course of it. Do you feel that human pediatricians and veterinarians really get that idea across well enough? Because it's no fun to pill a cat. So do you think there are people that are just giving half the amount of time and therefore creating super bugs that are resistant, and then the kitty, the next time it might ever really need antibiotics, they're not going to work?
Yes, yeah, so everything you just said, of course, is spot on. A lot of this has really been very, very well studied in human medicine. And so typically, if a pediatrician prescribes a 7-day course of antibiotics for a child, the average length of the course that's actually given is about 4 days, either because mom or dad decides that the little one is better, or after a couple of days, the child decides they don't want to take it anymore, and it becomes such a drama in the house,
yes,
that it's just not worth it to mom or dad to do that, you know, to their child. And the same kind of deal happens with cats. Gosh, how many of us, if we're told we need to give a pill twice a day for 10 days to a kitty cat, can actually get that pill in easily twice a day for 10 days? In my own kitty cat, Weezer, who had a urinary tract infection some years ago, needed 2 pills a day for 14 days, so that's 28 pills. And after 2 weeks, I had 8 pills left over, and I'm supposed to know what I'm doing. So it's not trivial to get this done.
No, that's a really good point. We have to go for another quick break, and then we'll be right back to wrap up. You're listening to Cat Crazy with Tracy and Dr. Phil Padrid. Our number is 888-429-5471, and we'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month, while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all 3 life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. Dr. Phil, we are back. And I'm wondering if in all the years you've seen cats struggling with these various breathing problems, other than obviously don't smoke around your cat for your sake and for your cat's sake, what are the kinds of things that people that might be new to cats or wanting to develop better habits, what are some of the things that you want them to either be aware of, do less of, do more of, in terms of the noses and the lungs and the breathing apparatus of a cat?
Well, a couple of things. Probably the single most important thing I can tell you is, if your cat shows any symptoms of coughing, that's something you really want to jump on right away. And that's
yes.
not to say you should be, you know, overly worried or a scared owner. It's just that cat lungs are a little bit different from people and a little bit different from dogs. And without, you know, too much detail, the airways are tubes and the lungs are separate from those tubes in people and dogs. But the airways and the lung of a cat really mingle much more together than other species. So what would be otherwise a reasonably trivial bronchitis, an acute bronchitis in you or me or a dog, doesn't affect the lung. And I don't want to be technical about it, but those are airways. They're tubes. And you get over
right.
it. A cat with bronchitis actually has an extension into the lungs that can have a deeper infection. And it just means that you really want to be pretty proactive with your little ones if they start coughing, just to be safe.
So in other words, is it sort of like pneumonia? It's sort of like instantly becomes pneumonia because it's in the lungs?
It's much more likely to develop pneumonia than it would be for a dog or a person. Yes.
And that's because of the physiology. Now, see, that's something
the anatomy of a cat's a little bit different, and that's one of the differences. The second thing is cats are not as susceptible to the effects of heartworm as dogs are, but they are nevertheless susceptible to heartworm. And all that means in English is if you have a kitty cat, you should be using a heartworm preventative just like you do in dogs. People can argue, well, it's much less common in cats, and that's absolutely true. But it's so trivially easy and inexpensive to give the preventative once a month, and it's so potentially serious a problem if they get it. What reason would you have for actually not using the preventative?
I couldn't agree more, and I think that it was on the expert vet we were discussing it about the fact that they found a number of cats who had heartworm disease who had been indoor cats for their entire life, which means all it took was one mosquito got into that house at some point and transmitted the disease. So there is no safe place for a cat where heartworm disease is concerned. And I just wish that vets were a little bit more firm-handed about it, quite frankly, because I don't think that we cat lovers, especially keeping them safe indoors, have really sensed the jeopardy. I mean, the word's been gotten out well by the American Heartworm Society or Association. I don't know which its proper name is, but they're always working hard to educate people. Heartworm medication year-round, every month, but they don't bring up the cat part so much. Is that the cat being the second-class citizen syndrome, or that the disease is less prevalent, but it's so devastating when they get it?
I think it's everything you just said. Cats are notoriously less sensitive to heartworm infection than dog, both in terms of actually getting infected and two, being able to fight it off. So a cat can actually, and often does, fight off the infection and is cleared of it, where that doesn't really happen in dogs. So historically, we're always more worried about dogs. And the second thing is that more dogs are outside part of their life than are some cats, so they're more likely to get infected. But to make the really important point again, it is completely preventable by using a monthly preventative. And you can use a collar, you can use a spray. There are a lot of products, and you know, I don't need to endorse any of them, but just the notion of giving a preventative is so trivially easy and inexpensive, there's really no reason not to be using them.
Do they also make a tasty chewable like for the dogs? My dogs are
absolutely crazy
about the HeartGuard Plus. Is like, I don't know, it's like pure liver. It's not really, but it's not like the brilliant food scientist. So why not give the cat something that's like a treat? Because it also has some other, it's a dewormer also, right? I mean, there's another worm, I think, that it takes care of besides the heartworm, if you're lucky. I guess that's the plus.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of products that do a bunch of things. And there are products available that can prevent heartworm and intestinal parasites and tapeworms and a bunch of other stuff. But it is so trivially easy and inexpensive. There's just no excuse not to be doing that anymore. And while it's honestly the notion of having an indoor exclusive cat get infected is actually kind of rare, what's the difference? If you come in the house and you have a mosquito that's infected with heartworm, then you've brought the mosquito into the home even if your cat had never gone outside. And so that can happen for sure.
So, all right. So that's it. We have to do monthly heartworm for our cats. It's just one more thing we've got to add to our to-do list. Think how much easier it is to cut a cat's toenails than a dog's toenails. That's all I can say. So you know what? You got the easy street there by comparison. So how hard is it to give monthly heartworm? Dr. Phil, it has been great to spend time with you on behalf of America's Kitties. They're so grateful for all this good advice. So many things that are not just curative but preventive. And I think that's so important. If we can learn ahead of time about things we can do that prevent a problem, it sure makes you feel better than feeling guilty later that, oh my God, if only I'd known this wouldn't have happened, right?
Absolutely. And if I could just say it as we close, today's Memorial Day, let's thank a veteran.
Very lovely. Absolutely right. Yeah, we should. I'm sure there's even places online that you can send out messages to veterans. Yeah, that's a really great sentiment. And we know that there's lots of dogs and cats actually doing their bit for veterans, especially more recent veterans with post-traumatic stress syndrome who have dogs and cats that are getting them through those really rough times. So these pets for us are delightful family members, but for some veterans, they're a real lifeline. And so we got to keep them healthy and safe for that reason as well, right?
Absolutely, Trace.
Thank you so much, Dr. Phil. Everyone has to stay tuned because we have Dr. Sue Ettinger, the pet cancer vet. I'm going to be talking to her about that Toni Morritt Tufts next week, too. I don't want to jump it on her now, but that's very interesting. Thank you so much again, Phil. Kiss your kitties, everybody. Hug your pooches, and we'll talk again next week. Bye for now.